The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Money.com. Our first article is entitled, 18 Million Americans Could Soon Lose Medicaid Coverage. Millions of Americans will lose their health coverage through Medicaid in the coming months after pandemic-era protections expired, an upheaval that experts say has no precedent. For the past 3 years, states have been barred from kicking people off of Medicaid in exchange for more funding from the federal government. This provision, tucked into the first COVID-19 aid package, led to a boom in Medicaid rolls over the course of the pandemic. The expansive government health insurance program for low-income people has ballooned to cover more than 85 million Americans, an increase of about 21 million enrollees from when the continuous coverage protection first went into effect. Those protections expired at the end of March, and already some states have begun to remove people who no longer qualify for Medicaid. This is a big deal, says Joan Elker, executive director of Georgetown University's Center for Children and Families. We expect a change of historic proportions to happen in the next year or so. As officials like to say, Medicaid is now unwinding. In less terms, 15 million Americans who are disproportionately black or Hispanic will lose their health coverage, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Independently, the nonprofit Urban Institute found that as many as 18 million people could be disenrolled. Many of these folks simply don't meet Medicaid's stringent income requirements anymore, explains Thomas Waldrop, a healthcare policy fellow at the Century Foundation. Earlier in the pandemic, many people's incomes took a temporary hit that initially qualified them for Medicaid. As their incomes rebounded, they would have normally been booted off. But the continuous enrollment rule allowed them to keep their benefits. With that rule gone, this group will certainly lose their coverage. What really worries experts, though, is how many qualified beneficiaries may fall through the cracks due to reintroduced administrative hurdles. If there's no affirmation of eligibility, Waltrip says, the state might disenroll someone as a result, even if they are actually eligible. That puts any of the 85 million Americans receiving Medicaid at risk of losing coverage. As eligibility checks restart, the burden of jargon-filled paperwork is expected to particularly disadvantage Latino beneficiaries and other people of color who may not speak English as a first language. For people who enroll during the pandemic and have never done an eligibility check, the process could be especially confusing. The letter might require a law degree to understand what it actually means, Alker says. How states are purging their Medicaid rolls. Even though Medicaid is a federal-state partnership program, experts say that individual states have a lot of latitude on how to unwind their Medicaid programs, adding to the confusion enrollees will face in the coming months. There's a saying that there's not one Medicaid program, there are 50, Waldrop says. States do not have to follow some basic guidelines, however, notes Alker from Georgetown University. For instance, all states must make their way through their Medicaid rolls and determine who's still eligible by May of 2024. They're first supposed to use information from SNAP, unemployment, or other databases to automatically determine eligibility when possible. If that information isn't available, the state is supposed to make contact, likely by mail, to request income and other household information. States are no longer allowed to remove someone if the letter is returned to sender. They must make at least one or other contact attempts, which could be by phone, text, or email, before disenrolling an individual. Beyond that, it's largely a patchwork operation. Perhaps the most pressing question is when a state will begin removing people who no longer qualify. Each state can choose the month the process starts, which has led to five broad waves. In April, five states have already begun Medicaid disenrollments. In May, 14 more states will begin disenrolling people. In June, 21 states and Washington, D.C. will begin disenrollments. In July, 9 states will begin disenrollments. And in October, the last state, Oregon, will begin disenrollments. This article also had a visual chart of the U.S. by state, and it indicated it appears that North Carolina may begin their process in July. Health insurance options after the great unwinding. Within a year or so, some 18 million Americans may be booted off Medicaid. If you're one of them, you may still have several options to get health insurance. Losing coverage kicks off a 60-day enrollment period where you can join other health care plans, according to Alker. This is not just well known, she says. In many cases, like with plans through the health insurance marketplace, you could have much longer than that to find a new plan. In addition to your state's Medicaid agency, federally funded health insurance navigators can also help you understand more about available health care plans for your specific situation. Here's a look at some of the most likely options that you qualify for will depend on the several factors such as your state income and family size. As Waltrip with the Century Foundation noted, many people who will be kicked off Medicaid will actually still qualify for coverage. Health and Human Services estimated about 7 million people will fall into this category. If you lose Medicaid coverage during the unwinding process, the federal government recommends reapplying with your state anyway. To keep coverage going forward, you'll have to pass routine eligibility checks, which may vary by state, but largely request income and other household information. It was common before the pandemic for people to lose Medicaid coverage and re-enroll later, according to the nonprofit Kaiser Family Foundation. This CHUM often affected people who had a temporary boost in income that disqualified them from coverage for a certain period of time, or because the beneficiary had trouble completing the eligibility check. Alker explains this trend to pick back up as eligibility checks restart, noting that people on Medicaid haven't had to complete eligibility checks for at least 3 years, with many new enrollees never having had to complete one. Turning them back on, she explains, is going to create a lot of churn. Employer-sponsored health insurance. Alker says the most common option for people losing their Medicaid coverage is going to be health insurance plans offered by employers. Many people are losing Medicaid coverage because their financial situation has improved over the course of the pandemic. Some folks may now have jobs that offer health insurance. If that's the case, losing Medicaid will initiate a 60-day enrollment period where people can join their employer's health plan. Even if your employer does not offer health insurance, you may also be able to join a partner or spouse's plan, and folks under 26 years old may be able to join a parent's plan as well. If plans through an employer are not considered affordable, you may be able to sign up for a subsidized plan through the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, instead, and if your jobs plan does cover your kids, they may be eligible for CHIP, Obamacare or state-run plan. Obamacare is another option if you don't get insurance through your employer or if your employer's plan is too expensive. Enrollment in Obamacare plans hit a record high earlier this year, and with the impending wave of people losing Medicaid, enrollment is likely to surge even more. Part of the reason more people have been signing up is because of more generous subsidies. The Inflation Reduction Act, passed last August, made the plans cheaper for people earning up to 400% of the federal poverty line. For people who lose their Medicaid coverage during the unwinding process, there's a special enrollment period that runs through July of 2024. Federal marketplace plans are available in 33 states. The remaining states have their own separate marketplaces for residents to sign up. You can get help signing up for a plan through healthcare.gov. Free health insurance navigators can also assist you with the process. When applying for Obamacare through the federal marketplace, the website says it will flag your application if it turns out you or a family member qualifies for Medicaid or CHIP, and send that information to your state agency. CHIP. Even if you lose your benefits, your kids could still stay covered. CHIP, or the Children's Health Insurance Program, works similarly to Medicaid, and it's available in all 50 states. CHIP is a federal state partnership program that provides low-cost health coverage for children in low-income families. Essentially, CHIP is a supplement to Medicaid. If you have a child and earn too much money to qualify for Medicaid, it's possible that your kid could still qualify for CHIP. Like Medicaid, each state can still set its own eligibility requirements, but CHIPs tend to be broader. CHIP often has significantly higher eligibility thresholds than Medicaid, Waltrip says. In New York State, for example, their CHIP eligibility goes all the way up to 400% of the poverty line. Unlike Obamacare or employer-sponsored health insurance, CHIP has no enrollment period, meaning you can apply for coverage at any time. If applying for health care on the marketplace, the website may recommend CHIP coverage if your child is eligible in your state. Likewise, if your state is terminating your Medicaid coverage, it should explain whether your child is losing coverage too. And what you can do right now. While Medicaid terminations won't happen for several months in some states, experts and state officials have been warning that everyone on Medicaid should already be preparing. The most important thing, Alker says, is to update your contact information right now. Contact your state Medicaid agency, your trusted community resources. Talk to your doctor's office. Talk to your clinic, she adds. Get proactive about this. And an article entitled "Inflation Rate Falls as Prices Drop for Groceries and Airfare." The headline inflation rate has fallen for 10 months straight. Consumer prices remain very high in certain areas, while falling sharply in others. From March to April, overall prices have jumped 0.4%, according to new inflation data released by the Labor Department on Wednesday. For the year ending in April, the inflation rate was 4.9%, slightly below economist predictions of 5%. Despite a steady decline in the annual inflation rate since the peak of 9.1% in June of 2022, inflation lingers well above the 2% rate that the Federal Reserve prefers to see over the long run. There's evidence here that things are improving, but improving slowly, Wendy Elderberg, an economics fellow and director of the Hamilton Project, said Wednesday during a virtual panel held by the Brookings Institution. So-called core inflation, which strips out volatile food and energy prices, posted a 5.5% annual increase in April and a 0.4% monthly increase from March. When weighing interest rate hikes, the Fed watches this specific measure of inflation closely. Why is inflation still high? In its report, the Labor Department said that the rising cost of housing, which jumped 8.1% annually and 0.4% monthly, was the largest single factor keeping inflation high, accounting for over 60% of the core inflation rate. The big picture? Inflation is affected by three main components, as Jason Furman, economics professor at Harvard University, explained during the Brookings panel. Those are supply, the labor market, and price expectations. While earlier in the pandemic, supply chain snarls were a major contributor to soaring prices, Furman says that's now a non-issue. The labor market remains tight, but that it's about as tight as it was in 2019. So what's going on? At this point, the main source of inflation is that it's just becoming self-perpetuating, Furman says. Businesses think everyone is going to raise their prices. So they do. Where are prices falling? April's inflation report is a mixed bag. On the whole, prices have gone up from the previous month, but there are a few areas where consumers are getting some relief. Piped gas utilities. Prices in those categories have plummeted 4.9% from March and dropped 2.1% from last April. Health insurance. Prices have plummeted 3.8% monthly and 15.8% annually. Major appliances. Prices for appliances like refrigerators and dishwashers shrank 3.4% monthly and 10.4% annually. Hotels and motels. Prices sank 3.4% last month, but are up 3.5% from last April. Car and truck rentals. Prices dropped 3.2% monthly and 11.2% annually. Airfare. Prices have declined 2.6% monthly and 0.9% annually. And lastly, groceries. While annual grocery prices are up 7.7%, they fell 0.2% monthly from March, with milk prices in particular dropping 2%. Our next article is Social Security Cost of Living Adjustments for 2024 could be 3% or less. At the start of the year, tens of millions of Social Security beneficiaries received an 8.7% boost to their monthly checks, the biggest raise in decades as a result of sky-high inflation. But this fall, when those government benefits are recalculated again, an annual process known as the Cost of Living Adjustment, or COLA, their raise won't be nearly as high, according to an early projection from the nonprofit, the Senior Citizens League. What's the 2024 COLA, and what will it be? The Social Security COLA for 2024 is projected to be 3% and likely less, says Mary Johnson, a Social Security policy analyst at the Senior Citizens League. Based on February inflation data, the COLA looks like it will be below 3% and could fall into the 2% range or even lower if consumer prices continue to decline throughout the year, as they have so far, Johnson writes in an email to Money. Compare that to the current COLA, which is at a 41-year high of 8.7%. Benefits for those enrolled in Social Security increased starkly between 2022 and 2023 as inflation surged. The average check went up about $1,550 from about $1,550 to almost $1,700 per average check. Keep in mind, by design, Social Security's annual COLA is in place to help beneficiaries cope with rising prices from year to year. Even with the historically high COLA that's currently in place, 54% of respondents of a recent poll by the League said they aren't convinced that benefits will keep up with rising costs this year. About 71 million Americans receive monthly checks from the Social Security Administration. Nearly 50 million of them are retirees, but the agency also provides monthly checks to more than 7.5 million disabled workers and 4.8 million children. The actual COLA set by the Social Security Administration won't be released until October. The agency uses inflation data, specifically a separate inflation rate for urban and clerical workers called a CPI-W for the months of July, August, and September to set the COLA. The takeaway? Although there's still a long way to go, Social Security beneficiaries may want to prepare for a COLA much smaller than the current 8.7% rate. I am telling retirees to not get used to this COLA, Matt Storr said, who's an advisor with the financial services firm Equitable, who previously told Money, it is extremely rare and likely will not be repeated as inflation should abate over the next few years. Johnson notes that these are very early projections. She won't release her official COLA estimates until May after more 2023 inflation data is released. But it's likely that future COLA estimates will be lower than 3% if inflation continues to ease in the coming months, as it is expected to, given the Federal Reserve's aggressive rate hikes aimed at curbing price growth. I will be happy if there is a modest COLA, Johnson writes, and then we end the year with inflation finally going negative. Our next article, stocks, real estate, or gold? What's the best investment now? When it comes to growing your wealth, deciding where to put your cash can feel like an impossible task. There are so many options, from gold to bonds to stocks to real estate and beyond. These investing options aren't exactly created equally either. Some are considered safer, others higher earning yet volatile. Which one is the overall best kind of investment, though? According to a new Gallup poll, lots of people seem to think their money is best invested in real estate in the long term. Notably, gold is gaining traction among investors, too. What the research says. Analytics company Gallup published a poll on Thursday about what investment sectors Americans consider the best long-term options for their money. Across the 1,013 American survey respondents, real estate tops the list, but some interesting trends abound. 34% said that real estate was the best long-term investment in 2023. While it tops the list, real estate has seen a decline of 11 percentage points since last year's survey. The percentage of people who think that stocks and mutual funds are the best investment also declined. Where 24% of Americans last year said that these sectors provided the best long-term investments, only 18% feel this way in 23. Stocks' decline of 6 points over the last year has put it underneath gold, which 26% of respondents feel is the best investment right now. Similarly, bonds, savings accounts, and certificates of deposits, or CDs, have risen in popularity since last year. What it means? While real estate and stocks hold a cumulative 52% of Americans' confidence as the best long-term investment choices, this year's results suggest a decline in confidence in these sectors. Given the economic environment right now, which sees mortgage rates trending around 6.5% and a low inventory in the housing market, it might be surprising to see real estate rank highest on the list. However, real estate has continuously topped the list since 2013. While 2021 and 2022 saw the popularity of real estate investing boom as a result of a heating housing market, this year's 34% figure puts it back on its pre-pandemic average trend of between 30 and 35%. Americans' confidence in stocks have taken a hit as well, dipping below gold as investors' second most favorable option as a long-term investment for the first time since 2015. This is not terribly surprising, given that since the last time the poll was conducted in 2022, the stock market has seen its fair share of volatility, making it a less appealing option than before. Indeed, real estate and stocks, perhaps the most volatile investment classes of the bunch in the main survey, are the only two in decline since last year's poll. The poll did include a half sampling of cryptocurrency questions and only saw 4% of respondents deeming it was the best long-term buy. Overall, Americans appear to be gravitating heavily towards less volatile, slower-growing sectors. Gallup notes that gold had emerged in the survey as one of the most popular long-term investments between 2007 and 2009 around the Great Recession. It makes sense to see it alongside bonds and CDs reemerging as favorites now, given recession fears and high inflation. Savings accounts, too, have gained traction as a top investment, especially as the Federal Reserve's rate hikes have allowed banks to offer some savory APYs. And our last article, and we'll try to get most of this in before the end of this episode, is entitled "The Average Down Payment on a Home is Shrinking. The housing market is less competitive than it was a year ago, and that's allowed the average down payment to shrink as a fraction of the typical purchase price. This trend reflects the fact that buyers are less able and or less compelled to put as much money into a home offer as they were in 2022, according to a new report from Realtor.com. And we're going to have to edit this article today due to time constraints. We're out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to listen to us again next time. On behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have any questions, please call us 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.